Good afternoon and welcome to Remarkables, a program on Vision Australian Radio. My name's Carolyn Herrick. My co-presenter today is Judy Stevens. Hi, Judy.
Hi, Carolyn, and hello, everyone.
And our very able techie is Alan McKenney. How often do we look at honour boards or other gold lettering without giving it a thought? Today, our guest, Bruce Jackson, is going to give us an understanding of the skill in creating these works of art. Welcome, Bruce. Good to have you
here. Hi, Carolyn. Thanks for having me on.
It's a pleasure, and thank you for the time.
Hi, Bruce. Bruce, before we learn a bit about this skill process, perhaps you'd tell us just a tiny bit about yourself, where you grew up and choice of career.
I'm a Melbourne boy. I've been doing signwriting for about 30-odd years now. I actually had a career in computing initially, straight out of uni, but I fairly quickly dropped that. I didn't realise it wasn't going to suit me. And after a bit of time travelling around and being a bum, as you do in your early 20s, I settled into signwriting as a career.
So, how did you come to signwriting? I mean, of all of the obscure things.
Yeah, well...
it's not something that mothers say to their sons, go out and be a signwriter, my son.
No, well, look, most people come through an apprenticeship system.
Right.
I didn't do that. I did some other artwork, and a friend of mine who was actually a potter had started doing signwriting in order to improve his design work for his pottery.
Oh, yeah.
And he saw some of the artwork I was doing and asked me to come and work with him, helping him design some signs. And so it just sort of was fortuitous. I worked with him for a while, learned the basics of signwriting. He actually went back to pottery and I continued on with it and basically just sort of it morphed into just being self-employed in signwriting.
Right,
okay. So, you know, from a traditionalist perspective, I would have been in those days regarded as a backyarder. But of course, you know, after a few years, you end up finding your way around and learning all the tricks and, yeah.
But so there's the design of the work that you're doing, but then there's all the different sorts of lettering and, you know, there must be an awful lot to learn with it all.
Well, there is. I guess you have the advantage that no one's life is relying on it.
True, that's a good point here. Who'd be a brain surgeon?
Yeah, but look, it is a very interesting, you know, it crosses the boundary of an art or a trade, and you can put it in either camp. You know, there's a lot of just straight skill with it, of using the brush. Actually, learning how to use a brush takes quite a long time, probably a couple of years. A little bit like learning a musical instrument, you really have to practice until it just becomes so automatic that you just think about the shape that you're forming and your hand will do it without needing to kind of concentrate on the actual movement of the hand. So there's that part of it, but of course there's a design part as well. You know, there's so much you can do with it as an art form. And of course you've got this other overlying, not issue, I'm trying to think of the right word for it, but overlying factor of the fact that you're working for a client and it has to serve a purpose. So it's really artwork with a function.
Yes.
Which you know, it's not a bad thing, because if artwork is... I sort of feel that if artwork is let loose without having any need to fulfil, it it can get to a stage where it sort of has no point. I think we see that with a lot of modern art. It's just trying to express an idea that is a bit groundless.
Yeah. You'd design the whole thing first, you know, you'd have to be making sure that the writing fits the space, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, well, generally you work out what you're doing to some degree or another. Some people like to design completely to every detail. Others just like a rough pencil sketch. But, yeah, when you're marking it out on the job, you'll mark it out and you make some adjustments. And then even when you're actually painting it, you might make some further adjustments and tweak the design.
Yeah.
Bruce, but generally, you know where you're going with it to begin with.
Yeah, yeah. How did your first customers arrive? Here you are puddling around with this. And
yeah,
you've turned it into a whole career, which is fabulous.
Yeah, look, basically just doing it the hard way, you know, going door to door in shops and handing them a brochure and saying, do you need any signs painted?
Oh, well done. Yeah.
And it gradually builds, and as you do more work, people see you working. And, you know, they'll say, I'll come and do my shop as well.
Mm.
Of course, that's all changed now, because I could do that in those days because I started in the early 80s when, you know, there was still a demand for signwriting. But of course, not long after that came in computerized lettering, and the whole industry changed. Of course, I didn't want to go down that path because I got into signwriting
because of computing.
Yeah, more because of its artistic aspect, really.
Mm.
And so to go back to a computer-generated lettering that was purely functional and didn't, the artistic part of it was not the same. That didn't hold great appeal for me, so I continued with the hand lettering.
Yeah.
And was this just with conventional paint?
Generally, yeah. Oil-based paints generally, enamels, but of course we use acrylics quite a lot as well.
Would you just use ordinary paint that you'd use to paint a house?
Oh, you can. You can. The trouble is with that sort of paint is that it's not very well pigmented. You know, those sorts of paints you buy as a base and then they put some tinta in it.
That's right.
So they're a bit gutless, really.
Okay.
The signwriting paint is actually, it's proper paint that's made with a, you know, with a pigment that's a particular colour. So it's much more opaque. It's just high quality paint.
Right, So you would have diverted then, or diverged probably is the word.
Yeah, which is the reason we got our talk today, because from that base of signwriting, I focused on gold leaf work. So gold leaf work was always regarded as, well, in a sense, the pinnacle of the trade.
Yeah.
If you could pull off a good gold leaf job, that was a mark of
talent.
Know, of good, yeah, and of developed skills. And particularly glasswork, gold leaf signs. So,
and this is done with very high carat gold, isn't it?
Yes, it's actually genuine gold. Most people don't realise that, but the standard gold that I use is 23.5 carat, which is about sort of 96-97% gold.
Yeah, that's nearly coinage.
Yeah,
it's only reason it's not quite pure is they put a little bit of silver and a little bit of copper in there, it helps in the manufacturing process when they beat the gold.
Right. It doesn't make it more flexible.
No, it's actually, if it was pure, it actually is softer and a bit more flexible, but it's much harder for them to beat because it tends to stick to itself.
Oh, right, yeah. And it comes in very fine little sheets,
yeah,
doesn't it?
Yeah, very thin. They're only about
butterfly wings.
Yeah, they're about a bit over 3 inches square, actually 85 millimetres. I'm not sure whether they're going inches or millimetres, but 85 millimetres is the size that I specify. And it's been actually beaten out. It is, in fact, beaten with a big hammer that goes through several beatings, and it's about 0.1 micron thick. So if your listeners don't know how much a micron is, if you had 10,000 sheets of it, that would be 1 millimetre thick.
Goodness gracious me. That is thin, yeah.
It's very thin.
Yeah, so how do you handle it?
Well, that's the thing. It's so thin that, you know, it's very subject to the wind. If you try and pick it up with your fingers, it sticks to your fingers because of the oil on your skin. So you actually pick it up with a brush. You have a special brush called the Gilder's Tip, and you rub it through your hair, which puts a little bit of oil on the brush, and then you can pick the gold leaf up on the brush. It also reacts. It doesn't like wind. Of course, you could imagine the tiniest little bit of wind blows
it
around.
Yeah, off it goes. Yeah. Yeah.
But, you know, it's so light and thin that if you put it in your hand, you can hardly even feel it. And if you scrunch a sheet of it up, it just disappears to nothing. It literally just disappears.
Good heavens.
Yeah. It's quite an interesting material to work with. It has a really lovely character about it. I really enjoy playing with it, working with it.
I'm sure you might. But it would be horrendously expensive.
Yes and no. I won't tell you how much I pay for it. Because I actually sell it as well. But when I sell it, it's a $45 a book that I charge, which is basically a sort of a trade price.
Yeah.
But that works out to roughly $2 a sheet.
Oh, okay.
You don't need too much wind then.
No.
I actually, I actually buy it from China. A lot of the gold was made in Europe, and I used to buy Australian-made gold, which was lovely gold. There was a company called William Ashcroft & Co. who made great gold leaf, and it was all hand-beaten. But unfortunately, that all dissolved, and they started importing it, so I thought, well, I can import that just as easily. And so I get it made in China, but what I do is actually I get it custom-made, so I have a couple of suppliers in China, and I specifically tell them specifically what I want as far as size, weight, and carat. And of course, the disadvantage is that I need to buy, you know, a few thousand dollars worth at a time, so to get the factory price.
Yeah.
And Bruce, there are different shades and different colours within gold.
Yeah, there are. Well, the standard gold, the 23 carat, is, you know, just a pure gold colour. We have the different ones. If you put a little bit more copper in it, that's a red gold. I've got one here with palladium in it, which is a moon gold. It's more of a warm grey colour, a beautiful colour.
What's palladium?
Palladium's another metal.
It's right.
Platinum, palladium, they're all very heavy metals in that gold series. And they're quite rare metals, quite expensive. They tend to be very hard metals, though. They're not soft like gold is. So they do make them into leaf, but they're not as nice to work with.
No.
But the other typical ones you would get would be where you start adding silver to the gold, and then you get like an 18-carat lemon gold or the 12-carat white gold, which is half gold, half silver.
Okay.
And that basically does for a white metal. I do use silver as well, but silver has the issue that it tends to tarnish. So white gold is much more resistant to tarnishing.
I can understand your interest in Chinese calligraphy.
Yeah.
You're obviously a man absolutely fascinated with brushes.
Chinese calligraphy is, I find, a really interesting thing because of my signwriting background. They use the same... There's a very close parallel, and yet they're quite different as well. So I can take my signwriting, my brush skills into you doing Chinese calligraphy, and I can make the brush do what I want with it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But there's a rather different aesthetic that the calligraphers, that Asian calligraphers, do with their writing. It's much more of a like a Tai Chi type of process. So they're concentrating on the whole movement of the brush and the energy of it. So there's a bit of a different mindset with the way they write. But I do find that the skills are transferable. In fact, because I'm learning Chinese, I quite enjoy every year at Chinese New Year, I go down to Box Hill with my calligraphy class and write. They have a little tradition for Chinese New Year where you have what they call Chun Lian or Dui Lian, which are little sayings, like greetings for the new year.
Yeah.
And you have them on hang them on either side of your door. So there'll be red paper with a greeting that's says something like, you know, good health in the coming year, and the, you know, whichever year it is. I think it's the year of the snake at the moment. But so you have that, and you know, Xin Nian Kuai Le, which is, you know, happy new year, things like that. So anyway, I'll write those for people, and of course they're amazed that this Western guy can write Chinese calligraphy.
I think that's lovely.
It's quite good fun to see the look on people's faces.
Yeah. And have you got enough Chinese language now to be able to order your gold in Chinese?
I can hold a conversation. Fortunately, the Chinese suppliers all speak English too, so we muddled by in a mix of both languages. So it's good fun. I enjoy it.
And Bruce, with your sign writing, working with gold, working on glass that's got another dimension to it, as in, you know, with the mirror effect.
Yeah, well, that's one of the things I wanted to talk about was because that's really my specialty is work on glass. Now, we haven't mentioned this term, verreglamisse, yet, have we?
No.
But that's the name of the art form that I do with the gold leaf work on glass. So, okay, my same sign writing techniques, same materials, oil-based paints. If we use all those on the back of glass, you know, we can do an artwork that that's done in reverse. So you're working on the back of the glass, you know, in layers and working with the gold leaf. So the word that describes that art form is either glass gilding or the verreglamisse is the other term. But it's a really interesting art form. There's not that many people using it. But it has a very long history and it's quite a fascinating one, and there's a lot you can do with it.
I think you were saying it goes back to Roman times.
Yeah, well, it does. The Romans were making glass bowls that they would have, a people's cup or bowl, and they would decorate the underside of it with gold leaf. So they'd gild it, scratch a design into it, and then fire another piece of glass onto the back of it. So you had this lovely design in gold on a glass bowl.
How gorgeous.
And they're known in the, you know, this Roman era were doing that sort of thing. So the technique is slightly different, but it's still that combination of gold leaf and glass.
Yeah. So it obviously then missed a few generations and resurfaced.
It sort of has, but in actual fact, there is virtually an unbroken line through history. So you can find the same techniques popping up in Italy in the 14th century where they're making religious reliquaries and little portable altars.
Yeah.
There's actually one in the National Gallery with gold leaf decorated on glass with a design scratched into it. And then it moves on into other parts of Europe, and they were making glass panels for furniture with designs on them. And, you know, glass, drinking glasses, things like that, all decorated with gold. And, of course, when they started making larger pieces of glass and making mirrors, a lot of that was done with, there's a connection with the gold leaf work and mirrors as well. So a lot of mirrors were decorated with gold or reverse painting. So the techniques come through that as well. And, of course, where it comes from, where I started with sign writing, in the Victorian era, I suppose, they were doing a lot of pub mirrors, and a lot of the sign writing on windows was being done with gold leaf. And so it's come down to today through that that stream.
Yeah. We're talking to Bruce Jackson. Bruce is
an artist.
Yes, who works with gold leaf, gilding, all sorts of amazing skills. Bruce, explain to me how you do a mirror. Do you put it on the back of a mirror and then put the mirror on the back of glass and then put the mirror surface over the gold?
Generally, what I do, the ones I do, because I'm really focused on the actual use of gold leaf, I like doing the mirror part with leaf as well, either silver leaf or 12-carat leaf. Most mirrors are done chemically silvered, of course. It's a chemical process of applying the silver, whereas I actually do it as an artwork so that it's done with the metal sheets. But basically, to put it simply, you start with a plain sheet of glass, put the design on the outside, either on paper or drawing it on with what we call a chinagraph pencil, and then do the work on the inside, on the back of the glass, and just build it up in layers of paint and gold leaf until you've got your design.
And then put the mirror sheet on behind.
Well, I actually do the mirror finish with 12-carat white gold.
Ah, right.
So it actually has a different look.
It'd be much softer.
Yeah, it has its own texture, and you can see this little squares of leaf. So it's a beautiful look, and it makes it look. It has a lot more character than a plain piece of mirror.
Oh yeah.
But of course, most of the pub mirrors, when they did those, they would put the design on there, do the lettering or any design work, and then they would just chemically silver the back of it.
Oh, right. And the gold withstood that, obviously.
Yeah. There's a couple of tricks you have to do to stop it from frying up in the process. But, that's not too difficult to do. And that's how a lot of commercial decorated mirrors are done.
Yeah.
Not too many of them are done with hand-applied leaf like I use, but that's the art form that I'm playing with.
Yeah. And when you do, say, a shop window, that would be the same sort of thing, but without doing the silver layer on the back.
Yeah, basically, yeah. Yeah, shop windows, you know, most of the shops that we see these days are really rather plain. You know, they've just got the plastic lettering or some other manufactured lettering. But, of course, there are always a few shops around that want something a bit special, and if they know about it, they'll come to someone like me to get a nice hand-lettered sign.
Nothing like word-of-mouth advertising.
Yeah.
Wonderful.
And
yeah.
I think you sent us a picture of a very special one.
Yeah, that was... unfortunately, your readers can't see it, but it's Le Belle Miette is the shop. It's a macaron shop in Collins Street. Now, the reason for that one is that because they're selling a French, you know, macarons, it was really suitable to go for a sort of a French look. And at the 100-odd years ago in France, in Paris particularly, there's quite a lot of very high-end sign work done for patisseries and boulangeries. And so we wanted to do one in that theme. And that picture that I sent you is in that sort of French style. So it's very much a Parisian style of sign work. But they developed it to a very high level, and there's some fabulous work in Paris of that type.
Yeah.
So I was pretty keen to have one here in Melbourne, and of course the top end of Collins Street is the perfect place for it.
Absolutely.
So if we're up in the top end of Collins Street,
we can buy a macaron
and admire my find.
But make sure you look at the window.
That's right.
Right at the top end of Collins Street.
Yeah. Yeah.
And then, doing it on, say, an honour board, I think you did a restored an honour board recently for Invalides.
Yeah, which is how we met. That Invalides job, of course, that's not my glass work, but... that was an honour board, a World War One honour board that was needed some repair work and restoration. And through a series of events, it needed to be relettered. So I won't go into the whole story, but there is somewhat of a full story behind it. But anyway, they came to me because they couldn't find anyone to re-letter it. Well, they wanted someone to re-letter it, but they wanted confidence that it was going to be done authentically and copy as closely as possible as it was originally done.
How wonderful, you know, that they still cared.
So, yeah, it was great, and it was a really nice project because, you know, the appreciation within the community for that piece of history, that piece of heritage, makes it very satisfying.
Mm.
Yeah, it was lovely to be involved in.
Do you get much work like that?
Yes and no. In honour board work, because I specialise in gold leaf, honour board work is what comes along.
Yeah.
But I quite enjoy doing honour board works. They drive me crazy a little bit with the tiny lettering. I'm getting too old for that. But you get into a bit of a mind state with it. You just keep painting the letters and. You just sit there and go with the pace of the work as it needs to be done.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then you'd be working with different woods and varnishes and all of that type of stuff.
You would if you were doing that sort of thing, but I actually don't really deal too much with, making the boards or anything like that. You know, I generally, clients will have their boards already done and I'll just come and put the lettering on.
All right, so the whole varnish, the board's ready to hang except for the lettering.
Generally, yeah. Well, with the case with Inverley, of course, that was the restoration. So there was another lady called Madeline Leishman who did all the work restoring the board, bringing the timber back and the varnishing and doing all that sort of thing. And she also did a lot of the heritage study on it. She's basically was doing her conservation at Melbourne Uni, a course in conservation. And this was the project that she took on under their... And so she did a great job on that, and then, but of course she didn't have the lettering skills to do that, so she came to me for that part of it.
Oh, very good. And then you did another very, very big project in Hong Kong.
Yeah, which was a lovely project. That was a few years ago now, but when they set up Disneyland in Hong Kong, Americans are management company in Disney couldn't find the skills in Hong Kong because this sort of gold leaf sign writing is pretty much a Western tradition. You don't find much of it in Asia. It does appear in some guises in Asia, but not in lettering. So they generally use their own guys in USA, but they found me and I tendered for the job and won it. So that was a great project. And I took a team of five sign writers to Hong Kong. So five crazy Aussie sign writers let loose in Hong Kong for a couple of months. The thing that was fascinating with that project was it's such a big project, and Disneyland is such a professional company. They're the most professional company I've dealt with by far, much bigger than anything in Australia that I've dealt with.
Yeah.
It was an amazing company to work with. A lot of incredibly talented and creative people there. But one thing that was very interesting, though, was because they were working in Hong Kong, a lot of the contractors were Chinese companies who would have an army of virtually unskilled workers doing the work. And Disney, being a Californian company, is very modern, very up, if you like. And of course, most of their people are very skilled. So there was this great clash of thinking, great clash of cultures going on with the Californian management and the Chinese companies with their army of unskilled people.
I can imagine.
It was an interesting process to be in the middle of.
Much tearing out of hair.
Quite a lot of hair. It got there in the end.
Chris, obviously, they were shop signs that you did? Or?
Yeah, they were all...
In Chinese or in
both.
English?
Yeah, mostly in English.
Yeah.
But there's a little bit of Chinese there for some of the signs.
Never having been to Disneyland, I'm assuming these are sort of shops that sell Disney stuff.
Yeah, well, they are. They're retail stores. But what they do is, because Disneyland is a fantasy world, they've done the retail section as a sort of an 1850s American township.
Right.
So
okay.
You walk in there and there's the castle in the centre, the Magic Castle.
Yeah.
And Main Street runs from the front entrance of a railway station right up to the castle, and you've got all the shops there. But because it's done as a fantasy of a township, all the signs were quite elaborate. Lots of gold leaf, very colourful. But it's they do it brilliantly because they, when you walk there, there's a little bit of magic that happens and you actually do step into this fantasy realm.
Mm.
You don't see it when, I didn't see it when it was a building site, I can tell you that. But but once it's all done, there's this little bit of magic that happens and you really do walk into another realm, another world, and it's a lot of fun. And they really are quite an extraordinary company.
Well, that sounds like it was one out of the box, a unique experience.
Yes, it was great. It was, I'm got my fingers crossed that I can get my foot in the door of Shanghai because they're building that park.
Oh, really?
Right. Yeah. Okay.
Which is one of the reasons for learning Chinese.
Ah, yes, right. Yes. Well, you'll love Shanghai.
Yes.
Yeah. Shanghai itself was an absolute buzz.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, good luck for that one.
Thank you.
Yes, yeah. keep us informed, won't you?
I will.
Oh, dear. Now, so, I've got on my run sheet here that you do work with coats of arms.
That was primarily because I brought one along to the meeting in Invalide that I'm working on at the moment.
Right.
Look, it's not so much specifically that I work with coats of arms, but just that I've got a client who wants one done.
Oh, right.
The reason he wants it is he's actually a tailor, and this is the royal warrant.
Oh, so, that's a bit flash.
Yeah, well, what he's he has permission to use it because of his Savile Row connection. So
yeah.
The royal warrant was granted to a tailor there, and it's come down to him. So, and once they're granted, you can use them in perpetuity. So he's getting me to make a royal warrant for him with the coat of arms on it, and you know, with the statement of, you know, by permission.
Yeah, that, mm-hmm. yeah.
He can trade with the, I forget the exact wording, but yeah, it's a very nice little piece of work because it's quite intricate and
yeah.
yeah.
What fun though.
Yeah.
It doesn't get boring for you.
No, clients all have different needs. Yes, they're all different. That's one of the joys of signwriting, actually. It's also one of the difficult things to deal with sometimes, but each client has a different need, and so you really have to try and, you have to develop a relationship with them and work out what they need doing,
yeah.
what they need done, and how you're going to go about it, and what your mindset is when you're doing the work.
Mm.
I would like to be able to just do all the work in the way that I would like to do it. You can't be quite that egotistical in this real world. You have to meet the client's needs.
Yeah. Oh, well, as long as you can come to a happy compromise.
Well, yeah, yes. That's right. And yeah. I don't mind that because in fact it's actually better that way a lot of the time because you're really you're doing something that's actually serving a purpose for the client and.
There's a discipline involved.
Exactly, yeah. It means that
it's stretching you, isn't it?
Exactly,
Well, Bruce, that is a half hour's up. I did say it absolutely flies by.
It does.
And
we got through a fair bit, though.
We did get through a fair bit. Yeah. And, yes, it's been most fascinating, more than interesting, absolutely incredible. And we do wish you luck for the Shanghai project.
Yeah.
And, as I say, keep us informed.
Great.
So thank you very much, Bruce Jackson.
Thank you.
Thanks, Bruce. That was really, really interesting.
Yep.
Lovely.
Okay, bye.
Bye.